Jerusalem will be recognized as the capital of Israel, and that he will move the U.S. embassy there. This is all contrary, of course, to international law, and considered a war crime and a crime against humanity by international law. Just think CNN, CBS, ABC, New York Times, which one Israeli observer said, if Israel decides to package Palestinian children into canisters and sell it as meat, the New York Times would be extolling its nutritional value. This is the reality, is that these mainstream media have become basically mechanisms for propaganda in ways that our Goebbels of Nazi Germany would not have even dreamed of the capabilities. I think the onus is on us, the people of the world, to stand up and push our governments to act for human rights. And this is what I think needs to be done.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. This interview that we're doing is going to be pretty controversial, but it's an important one to do. I'm bringing Mazin Kamsia back to the program. He was educated in the United States. He's a Palestinian Christian who was educated in the United States, who he became a professor, and he taught at Yale, and he taught at other top schools in our country. And then after 30 years of teaching here, he went back to Palestine and became an activist. He does teach at the University of Bethlehem. But he's his voice is very strong in the community, and he's an activist for human rights and justice. And he's going to come to the show and explain what the reaction was from that part of the world of Trump's decision to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. He also talks about what the rest of the world thought of it at the United Nations. And then we get into more of the politics locally in Israel and how it affects the United States. It's a very eye-opening interview from a different perspective that we never hear in our media here, which is too bad because we won't be educated unless we hear both sides of the debate. And I think hearing this side of the debate is very important, very eye-opening. And I think we all have to be for human rights and justice and determine what that really means. And with only getting one side of any kind of story, you're not going to know. And that is just not okay with me, and it shouldn't be okay with you. So I hope you listen to this whole interview. Take it at heart. He has his website, which I'll have up here on the screen, has 70 different ways that you can get involved personally to help with human rights and to help with this cause. It's on his website, and I'll have that link up. So let's get into that interview now with Mazin Kamsia.
Hi, Mazin. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me on your show.
You are such a strong voice for Palestinians and the Muslim community at large, and I wanted to hear your perspective on the latest developments that are going on. As you know, the United States announced they're moving their embassy to Jerusalem. What was the reactions of the Palestinians and the Muslims in general to that announcement?
Well, let me just clarify that we Palestine is a country from the river to the sea. It includes people of various religions, Muslims, Christians, and even native Palestinian Jews and others who live here and have lived here for hundreds of years. My own family is Palestinian Christian. I'm not a spokesman for anybody. I'm a spokesman just for myself. But anyways, the situation of people here, my own humble opinion about what's going on is basically we have a colonial, anti-colonial struggle. And the colonizers, European Jews who came here with the idea of changing a multi-ethnic, multicultural, multi-religious society to make it into a Jewish state of Israel, this effort, which is failing, is now in its last breaths, basically. And And usually in these systems, like we saw with apartheid South Africa, the systems of racism get very vicious and mean at the end. And they usually have support from Western governments. And certainly in apartheid South Africa, the white minority apartheid regime had support from the United States and England and many other countries. And the same here, the apartheid state of Israel has support from the United States and from many other countries. So this was manifest, for example, 100 years ago in the Balfour Declaration. And here we are 100 years later with a new declaration, this time from the president of the new empire that replaced the British Empire, and that is the U.S. Empire, who declared in his juvenile, amateurish way that Jerusalem is the capital of the Jewish people and that Jerusalem will be recognized as the capital of Israel and that he will move the U.S. embassy there. This is all contrary, of course, to international law. And considered a war crime and a crime against humanity by international law, because an occupying power cannot change the status of the occupied areas, including in Jerusalem, which is an occupied city. So he clearly didn't consult any lawyers to tell him that this is an illegal move, because from the 1970s, basically, no country would move its embassy to Israel because to Jerusalem because it was considered illegally occupied territory. So this is this amateurish decision from this juvenile president basically unleashed a series of chain reactions. I would say some of them are negative, some of them are positive. In some ways, I think some positive elements came out of it, and we can talk about those if you want. But Israel, of course, took it as a green light to do more damage to already the destroyed Palestinian society in Jerusalem and demolish homes and kick people out, etc., continue its ethnic cleansing that already left 7.5 million Palestinians as refugees or displaced people.
So could it be a positive move in the sense that it's now, okay, the only thing that's left on the table is a one-state solution, and that's what we have to do and figure out a peaceful way to get there? Or is it just, like you said, Israel now, it's a green light to just completely take over?
Well, when Trump came to office, and even in his campaign, he alluded to how he's going to solve this problem that other presidents could not solve, our problem, so to speak. And this deal of the century that he talked about. And immediately after he came to office, he appointed his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, to be kind of an envoy to the Middle East. This is a guy who has no knowledge of history or politics, or diplomacy, or any aspect. He's just his only credentials is that he's a rich guy born with a silver spoon in his mouth, and he's married to a daughter of another rich guy. That's his only credentials. And so when Kushner and Trump started meddling in this issue, they immediately came up with some plans that were clearly not going to work, which is to liquidate the Palestinian struggle. Now, how do you liquidate the just struggle, one of the most just struggles in human history, a struggle of 12.5 million people, 7.5 million of them refugees or displaced people, their right to justice, their rights to human rights, the rights to basically live in their own country, how are you going to liquidate that? So he needed help. So he went to Saudi Arabia. He got billions and billions from them and then got them on his side to basically try to finish off the Palestinian cause. by settling us in Sinai and other kind of options. This is not going to work, of course, and everybody knew it was not going to work. So he, as part of, but these insane megalomaniac leaders usually go on to do even worse things as they proceed. So when he saw that it was not working and nobody was listening to him, he issued this declaration about Jerusalem to try and tell the Palestinians and the world, come on, give up on the cause of Palestine. The positive aspect that happened as a result of this is, as you pointed out, it really clarified that there was a charade called the negotiations towards this two-state solution, and this was exposed as a charade. The second thing that it showed is that the rest of the world cannot be intimidated. And when Nikki Haley went in the UN and President Trump echoed her by threatening the world countries that they face punishment from the U.S. if they stand up with human rights or international law, or if they support the international law, which says very clearly that Jerusalem doesn't belong to Israel, then they would punish them. And but this threat, you know, worked on a couple of countries. One of them is Guatemala and Honduras, but it didn't work on most of the world. So 128 countries voted in the General Assembly that this is an illegal move that violates international law. 9 countries opposed it and 35 countries abstained. The 9 countries that opposed it were all, the U.S. and Israel, of course, and then 7 countries which were dependent on the U.S., Micronesia, Marshall Islands, Palau, such great empires, you know, that are totally dependent on U.S. aid. So that's what happened. And so in many ways, it shed the light back again on the Palestinian cause and the justness of the Palestinian cause. And it removed this, pulled the rug out of Mr. Trump and Mr. Kushner's plans, basically.
So where does it stand right now?
Well, the U.S. Ambassador has met with the Israeli ministries. The U.S. ambassador is a settler, by the way. His name is Friedman. A Zionist has been supporting the settler movement and spent most of his time in the colonial settlements that are a war crime and a crime against humanity here in the West Bank. And this U.S. ambassador, whose loyalties do not lie with the U.S., his loyalties lie with his masters in Tel Aviv, Mr. Friedman, who wants Jerusalem to be eternal capital of Israel, because he considers Israel his own country rather than the United States. He's supposed to represent the U.S., but he's really representing the Zionist movement. And so he is going to try and get the U.S. embassy moved, perhaps in 2 to 5 years, who knows. I doubt if they can get many countries besides Guatemala, maybe Honduras, and Micronesia, and those tiny islands don't have embassies in other countries anyway, so it doesn't matter. So maybe 2 or 3 countries will follow suit. But it doesn't really matter how many countries will succumb to the U.S. Embezzlement, basically, and pressure and do this, because international law is very, very clear. And those countries that do are violating international law. The question that really is on my mind is, what's the rest of the world going to be doing when there's blatant violations of international law and human rights? Israel is in violation of the Convention Against Apartheid. It's in violation of a number of UN Security Council resolutions even. And those cannot be removed, by the way. Once they are instituted, they cannot be removed, including a Security Council resolution just last year, just a year ago, which was approved without the U.S. vetoing it, as it did many other resolutions, which calls Jerusalem occupied area and calls on Israel to stop the settlement activities. I think the onus is on us, the people of the world, to stand up and push our governments to act for human rights. And this is what I think needs to be done.
Well, what do you think about the Israel meme that anybody who's against Israel being able to declare their own capital, Jerusalem, or anybody that talks about Israel against the Palestinian, you know, against Israel, that they're anti-Semitic? What do you believe? What do you think about that narrative?
Well, it holds no credibility any more than calling anybody who was against the Nazis in Germany to be anti-German, or anybody who's against apartheid in South Africa to have been anti-white. No, I mean, this is not a struggle between Jews and non-Jews. There are millions of Jews in the world who do not identify with this idea of colonialism, racism, Zionism. There are also many non-Jews who support these ideas. For example, there are also Christian Zionists who support colonialism and racism. And we as Palestinian Christians stood against that, of course, and explained to the world why this is against the teachings of Jesus. So I think it's important to distinguish this. And Israel, by confusing the issues, actually promotes anti-Semitism, because Israel keeps insisting that it's a Jewish state and puts Jewish symbols on its jets that are bombing refugee camps and killing thousands of civilians. This, if anything, is the confusion of the issue, not anything else.
It hurts Jewish people overall, doesn't it? When it shouldn't have anything to do with being Jewish.
Absolutely. And that's why many Jews, by the way, work strongly with us, because they feel that Israel has hijacked the religion and caused many people to start, instead of worshiping the one God, worshiping this idol called the Jewish State of Israel and Zionism. And this is a form of worship of idolatry, basically. So many people are against it. And I think ultimately the minority who support this, who are doing it, of course, not for religious reasons, they are doing it for economic reasons, for money, for power, just like all the other situations in history where people have used religion for particular causes. I mean, whether the Crusaders in the old days, or whether it's the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq that was declared and now is finished. All of these things that people have used religion for their own political reasons and for money and power, not because the religion says so.
It's a useful excuse. Well, now that you're saying that, I saw, and actually you had a newsletter that went out that had the internal Israel document on how they were going to do propaganda against the Western countries. It was supposed to be just a printed document that was very private, and somehow a newspaper got a handle of it and copied it, and it went out. And in it, they said that they spent something like eight times as much money over the last decade, or no, now they spend eight times as much as they did a decade ago to convince people of the support of the Israel nation. Can you explain that document and what you found with it?
Well, there's a number of such documents that were leaked that show how the Zionists have tried to manipulate media. In Britain, there was even a great scandal about how they tried to influence elections to parliament. And in the U.S., of course, the Israel lobby and what it has done over the years in various forms was exposed in books like by Paul Findlay, which is titled They Dare to Speak Out, and so on. There's a lot of information out there if your audience is interested to read about the influence of the lobbies in the media, in the mainstream media, and also among the politicians. What is remarkable, what I find remarkable, is that despite all their efforts, they are failing. The Zionists, that is, are failing. Because the boycott, divestment, sanctions movement, for example, is growing. And they have spent millions of dollars, perhaps billions of dollars, on media to counteract things like the BDS and counteract international law and counteract human rights. And they seem to be failing, and they are starting to panic. And perhaps this is why we see things like what they are doing in the Israeli Knesset by passing law after law that's more and more racist. It's a form of self-validation to kind of feel that they are doing something, but really they are failing at it. Now, the reason they are failing is very obvious, because the truth is not on that side. The truth is on the side of human rights, justice, equality, sharing, not on the side of ethnocentric, chauvinistic nation states that want to maintain a separation and apartheid of anybody who's not Jewish. There is history is against that. Nature is against that even. I'm a biologist and I tell my students, you know, a sign of a strength, you know, strength in an ecosystem is to have many species with few individuals of many, many species. A sign of a deteriorating ecosystem is when one species or two species are dominant over it. So diversity is strength, not weakness. And the weakness is in trying to create, you know, monolithic states, whether white state, German Aryan state, or South African apartheid state, or a Jewish state, or a Catholic state, or whatever.
Well, can you explain, you're saying they're passing more and more laws that are discriminatory, racist. What type of laws are they passing? So people have an example of what's really going on.
Well, for example, the idea that the law that they passed last year, which talks about Israel as the nation, the home of Jews, that Israel is the nation, the Jewish, they called it the nationality law. Nationality law simply says that this is the country for the Jews. What about the people who are not Jewish that are living in this country? Includes 20% of Israelis who are within the Green Line who are non-Jewish, plus if you add the Palestinians in the West Bank and Gaza, we're actually more than 50% of the population who's not Jewish, who are living under Israeli control. So more than 50% are disenfranchised by this law. There are laws about eliminating the idea of Arabic as an official language. There are laws about marriage. For example, the Palestinian from inside the Green Line who marries a Palestinian from Jerusalem, from the West Bank or Bethlehem, for example, cannot bring that person to live with them. If they marry anybody from around the world, if they marry somebody from Greece or Italy, they cannot bring that person to live with them in their own country because they are not Jewish. But any Jew in the world can come here, get automatic citizenship, live in this country, and marry whoever they want to and get them automatic citizenship too. So there's all sorts of laws like this. There are more than 50 such racist laws, and they're increasing every week, basically.
Can you talk about the propaganda and the money they're spending? How are they actually trying to convince people of their Israel state? I mean, we don't see commercials. So how are they spending their money? Are they making movies? What are they doing that supposedly is trying to convince people or support that narrative?
Well, I mean, just today I watched a video that CNN was staging a demonstration in London by Muslims supposedly calling for Khilafah. And they actually leaked the video that shows that this was staged by CNN. There is a lot of the media that's staging new, information that is trying to vilify Muslims and Islam and try to glorify Israel and make it such the only democracy in the Middle East. How many times have we heard this nonsense about the only democracy in the Middle East? Just think CNN, CBS, ABC, New York Times, which one Israeli observer said, if Israel decides to package Palestinian children into canisters and sell it as meat, the New York Times would be extolling its nutritional value. This is the reality, is that these mainstream media have become basically mechanisms for propaganda in ways that our Goebbels of Nazi Germany would not have even dreamed of the capabilities of distorting reality in the mainstream media to make to make the natives look bad, to make Palestinians look as terrorists, and to make Israelis look like they are defending themselves, when in reality it's the other way around. I mean, there's, as I said, the colonial, anti-colonial struggle. European Jews came here, kicked out the Palestinians. 7.5 million of us are refugees or displaced people. And the rest are cooped up in Bantustans, ghettos, where we are not allowed to move even from one place to another without Israeli permission. This is the reality. And the reality takes a lot of effort to hide. That is why they spend so much money to distort, to channel things away from the reality, to channel them into useless information that's totally irrelevant, and this is what they do. And they have experts in media manipulations that do this, books written, and I can send you document after document about their training of their propagandists, what they call Hasbara in Hebrew, that they want to give impression that is not the reality, and it works to some extent. But then again, we say in Arabic, you cannot hide the sun with a sieve. You know, the truth is out there, and anybody can find it if they want to. And now with social media, it's very hard to control social media and the internet. They're trying, by the way, they're trying. In the U.S., even the net neutrality is now being compromised with new Trump executive orders. But eventually, the truth cannot be hidden because it's so obvious. Anybody can come here and see for themselves 8-meter-high, walls, 30-foot walls that basically block Bethlehem from Jerusalem. If Jesus' family is trying to get from Bethlehem to Nazareth today, they would be denied entry because they are Palestinians. This is the reality. Anybody can see it. And anybody who can visit, all the international media who come here, they go back understanding more how to report. And it's becoming so difficult to hide all these facts. And that is part of the reason why there's a paranoia in the Israeli elite governing system.
Well, how do you know there's a paranoia? What kind of behaviors are you seeing that really show that they're paranoid and they're really getting scared?
Well, an example of this is their annual meeting at the Herzliya conference, the town of Herzliya on the coast, where you see Israeli leaders and the elite, the rich people in Israel, the billionaires, get together to review the status of what's going on. And the Herzliya conference, the paranoia in the Herzliya conference is very obvious, where Israelis are told there's dangers to the existence of the state of Israel as a Jewish state. Those dangers, there are two main dangers. One is the demographic threat, meaning Palestinians who happen to be Christian or Muslim who don't happen to be Jewish and they are breathing here among us, and eventually we have a problem with this because they can vote if we give them the right to vote, or if we don't give them the right to vote, we have to keep oppressing them in Bantustan. So this is what they are discussing. And then the second paranoid thing that they bring up, they talk about BDS. BDS, boycott, divestment, sanctions, as an existential threat to the state of Israel. Israel already spent over $100 million to counteract the BDS movement, and yet the BDS movement continues to grow. So, one of the reports actually leaked out shows that this strategist saying that whatever Israel is doing, it's not working to counteract, quote-unquote, these threats. And we can talk about other kinds of things. For example, Israel pushed the United States to go on endless wars in the Middle East for the benefit of Israel, including the invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. Iraq especially, that cost the U.S. taxpayers $3 trillion. But it ended up backfiring on them. The chickens came home to roost, so to speak, because what happened is the Iraqi people became very strongly anti-Zionist, anti-Israel, anti-the U.S. And now Iraq is allied with Iran, basically, and Iran has gotten stronger. Syria has gotten stronger. Hezbollah in Lebanon has gotten stronger. Hamas in Gaza has gotten stronger. So whatever they are doing is not working, and they are realizing it's not working. And this explains their psychotic, paranoia about these things.
Well, do you see a World War III coming then? Do you see this turning into a bigger deal than just kind of isolated endless wars, but a bigger war?
I certainly hope not, because wars in the 21st century, especially if we start them in the Middle East somehow, are going to be global wars. They are not going to be local wars. And they are going to have nuclear weapons used. Israel has hundreds of nuclear weapons. Pakistan and India have nuclear weapons. Nuclear weapons are easy to make now, and people can acquire them. And they've already used tactical nuclear weapons in Yemen. So the regime used tactical nuclear weapons on the Yemeni population. Thousands of people were killed in Yemen. And we see that this is not going to be contained. So my hope is that saner minds will come about. And I hope the public in the U.S., in the West, in Australia, in Canada, in the U.S., just gets up and says enough is enough. And in so doing, they do like when we did, when we stopped the war in Vietnam, or when we pushed for civil rights in the U.S. It's the people who can change things, and I hope the people rise up and change things.
One thing you mentioned is that nuclear weapons are easy to make now. And the narrative that we hear in the United States is we want to keep, putting sanctions on countries because they might get a nuclear weapon. Is that just complete BS, because nuclear weapons are fairly easy to make?
Yes, I think so. In many ways, I mean, what they are doing about North Korea, for example, is totally counterproductive, besieging the country and making it think that the only safety it can have is via nuclear weapons, because the United States would not give up its nuclear weapons and is willing to use them and have used them. The only countries before this tactical drop on Yemen that have used nuclear weapons is the U.S. So I think it's a very dangerous situation, and I pray that that saner minds in the U.S. military even begin to understand that, somebody like Trump is actually very unstable, and I wouldn't put it past him that he would want to drop a couple of bombs on on North Korea, hoping that this will end the problem. But what it will do, of course, is will create a real world war. I mean, I think the last two wars that we call world wars were not really global wars. They were mostly European wars with some involvement from Japan in the Far East, but really they were mostly European wars and mostly localized. But now, if we have a war, it could be a real global war where not any corner on this earth will be safe from the fallouts that will happen.
Well, one thing I read in one of your newsletters is that Nikki Haley is a Zionist and that she changed her name. Could you explain that?
Well, she was born to an Indian immigrant to the U.S. She came to the U.S. when she was young, and she was a very ambitious young girl. And she changed her name to drop her Indian name and to adopt this name of Nikki Haley and to cozy up to the Zionists, who found her very, very accommodating to their needs. And so they quickly pushed her through the media, through a lot of good, positive story about her, even though she couldn't accomplish very much in her life. But she was very sympathetic to the Zionists, and she became governor of her state. And then President Trump, to placate Kushner and the other Zionists around him, picked her to be UN ambassador. But she really knows nothing about the rest of the world or about the United Nations or how it works or how it operates or how it's funded or any of this stuff. She doesn't even know where she is sometimes. But it's amazing that she has become such a powerful woman who might eventually be replacing Tillerson, who's, even though he's right wing, you know, as Secretary of State in the U.S., at least he has some rationality and does not, spout the kind of juvenile statements that Trump and Nikki Haley say about the world and about Islam or Muslims or things like that. So Tillerson might be replaced soon, and there's some talk of firing him and putting her as the next Secretary of State. I suspect this will happen very soon, actually.
Why do you think they're going to be firing Tillerson?
Because he's not towing the party line 100%. He's doing it 99%. And I think they want somebody, the Zionists always want somebody who's 100%. So Tillerson has said some things like, you know, our fight is not with Islam. Our fight is with extremists who want to attack our country. This to them is not acceptable because the Zionists want this to be a religious war. They want this to be as Islam versus Judaism because they think they represent Judaism. And because they have confused religion with nationality, they project this to the rest of the religions in the world. So they think that Muslims are also thinking or must be thinking as tribal, and just like the Zionists are thinking tribally. So they want this message of divisiveness and religious war and clash, a la Huntington clash of civilization, so to speak, to be real. It is not real, it's concocted. I mean, it could be self-fulfilling prophecy, but at this point it is not real. There is no clash between Islam and Judaism. As I said, many Jews oppose Zionism and many Jews support Zionism, and some Muslims support Zionism and some Muslims hate Zionism, etc. So I think, you know, the notion that they want to divide and conquer and create conflict in the Middle East that's religious is a Zionist idea that goes back to the late 19th century. when Herzl put these things in motion and said that we have to create a Christian state in Lebanon, a Kurdish state in northern Iraq and Syria, you know, to divide the Middle East into sectarian states, because that will make Israel look normal in such a neighborhood when everybody is sectarian.
Trump is very influenced by Zionists, but is he any worse than any of our past presidents in the near past, you know, the last couple of presidents? Or is this a notch more supportive of that the Zionist movement?
That's a very good question. I actually think that presidents don't make foreign policy with regards to the Middle East anymore. And this has been the case since actually Harry Truman came to power and after Roosevelt got rid of his vice president and put Truman as his vice president, and then Truman got to be president when Roosevelt died in office during World War II. I think from that time on, presidents no longer determine foreign policy. It is done in Tel Aviv, basically, with regards to the Middle East, and transmitted by the lobbies to Washington. And we saw this, for example, in 1991, when George Bush had to backtrack very quickly when he tried to challenge Israel on the settlements. And then he said to the reporters that I'm just this little lonely guy in the White House, and there's all these thousands of lobbyists. So I think the U.S. foreign policy has been hijacked already, that Obama or Trump or anybody else is just fulfilling whatever the Zionists decide with regards to the Middle East. Having said that, I think there's something that has to do with style that's different. And previous administrations, for example, while they supported Israel's control of Jerusalem and ethnic cleansing of Jerusalem and trying to make Jerusalem a Jewish city, they didn't dare move their embassy to Jerusalem. Trump is going to be different, and his Zionist advisors are misleading him. I mean, Barack Obama had Zionist advisors, but they were more rational. In the case of Trump, his Zionist advisors are less rational, and they think they can get away with a lot more. This is what makes it a little bit more unusual. But on the other hand, I mean, as I said, maybe Trump is good in one sense, is that he will accelerate the demise of the U.S. empire. He will make the U.S. economy go down further down the hill, basically, and he wants to spend more money on the military, unneeded military, and he's trying to blackmail other countries, and eventually this leads to a backlash. So eventually, I think it might be good that he has a different style, but not substance as to previous presidents.
One thing I've noticed with Trump is that what he's done locally in this country, in the United States, has actually been good for a lot of Americans. But geopolitically, I've been seeing some pretty amazing things, like you're saying. So do you think that no matter how what we do internally and strengthen our internal base, you think that we are weakening ourselves geopolitically and internationally, that that will speed up the demise of the United States?
Yes, I think the Achilles heel of any empire, if we look at the Roman Empire, it used to be very strong and used to have a semi-democracy, if you want, with the Senate and all this stuff. But what ended the Roman Empire is that it stretched itself too far, too wide, with its military in many places. And it was the largest empire of its time. And the U.S. is now the same thing. The U.S. military is in 140 countries. It stretched itself too thin. It's trying to compensate for that with economic development. And the U.S. is still has strong science and strong innovation and strong development of industries. But the question is when that balance is going to tip in the wrong direction. And I think the Zionist movement in the U.S. is accelerating it's tipping the balance in a negative direction that will hurt the U.S. economically. Because the U.S. has $20 trillion in debt, and nearly half of it is due to Israel. And I think this is something that the American public will eventually see and will either turn against Israel and get the U.S. back to its citizens, or they will allow Hollywood and the mainstream media to keep guiding them into this paranoid hatred of Islam and Muslims, and to continue this line of conflict to have a global war in which no winners will be out. I mean, it will be all losers.
When we use our resources for things that aren't us and it's all over the world and spread thin, we don't have that many resources to be doing that. So, I've done some other shows on that as well. But what do you see is going to transpire over the next year or two when it comes to this? Do you think it's just going to keep getting to be more contentious? I mean, can it get more contentious? I mean, it's getting pretty bad right now, isn't it?
Well, I think the truth is coming out, and the truth is very powerful. And more people, I mean, if you look at the United States public opinion, before they invaded, before the U.S. government decided to invade Iraq, 70% of the U.S. public was supportive of that invasion. After the invasion, after all that transpired, and after the truth came out, now more than 70-80% of the U.S. public thinks that was a horrible idea. So obviously the public opinion shifts. And in the U.S., a few years when I first came to the U.S. in 1979, I went to the U.S. in 1979 to get education. If you mentioned the word Palestine, people had no clue what you are talking about, even though it's the geographic name of the Holy Land. And now people know, and more and more Americans, when you ask them, for example, about foreign aid, they don't want foreign aid going to Israel like this, billions of their tax money going to Israel. So Congress is going against the will of the American public in this case because of the lobby. And I think more and more people are seeing this. And this must transpire into some change in politics and change in behavior, as happened with the civil rights movement and other movements.
Well, where can people learn more about you and maybe get your newsletter and see more of your work?
They can get on Google and look up my last name, Qumsiyeh. And even if they misspell it, I'm sure it'll show up, Mazen Qumsiyeh. And they can network with me and ask me any question they want. We believe in dialogue. We believe that people should find out the truth. Because, as I said, there's no win-lose kind of scenarios. There's either we all win or we all lose as human beings. And I'm talking about Israelis, Palestinians, Americans, everybody. So I think people need to get involved because eventually it does impact their lives and livelihood. And I encourage them to get involved with their communities, with changing, always thinking globally and acting locally.
So what can the average person do? I know you're saying they should get involved, but what does that mean?
Well, get informed is number one, because without facts, without... You know, knowledge is power, and you have to get the knowledge. Don't believe anything I say or anybody else says till you find out the real information, and then act on it. Acting on it, there are hundreds of ways to act, from media work, social media, speak to your neighbors, do lobbying, speak to your elected officials. Elect the right people who watch for the interests of the people rather than the interests of billionaires and special groups. And there are many, many other ways people can do, including boycott, divestment, sanctions, just like we did with apartheid South Africa. It was very important. International solidarity is always important in these situations. So there are many, many ways. On my website, actually, which is just my last name, kumsiya.org, people can find the list of 70 ways they can work for human rights, for peace, with justice.
Excellent. I'll make sure that website is up for people. It'll be on the show page. I love that you have 70 ways that people, 70, right? Ways that they can help with human rights and justice, because people don't always know what to do. Thank you so much, and I hope you have a wonderful new year.
Thank you very much.